Hello, Twins fans. This is John Swole with TwinsTrivia.com, and today we have another interview with a former Twins great. This time we get to talk to pitcher Roger Erickson. Roger was drafted by the Twins in round 3 of the 1977 draft out of the University of New Orleans, and believe it or not, he made the Twins starting rotation the following spring in 1978. Erickson went on to pitch for the Twins from 1978 through May of 1982, when he was traded along with catcher Butch Weininger to the New York Yankees for Pete Filson, Larry Milbourne, John Pacella, and a bunch of cash. Erickson pitched for the Yankees the remainder of 82 and part of 83 before injuries cut his career short, and at the age of 26, his big league career was over. So grab a cold one, find a comfortable chair, sit back and relax, and listen to what Roger has to say. Hello, Roger. Welcome to TwinsTrivia.com. You were born in Springfield, Illinois, I believe, and grew up attending Lanpierre High School. What sports did you play in high school?
In high school, I played basketball and baseball.
And Lanpierre High School, I believe, is the same school that Hall of Famer Robin Roberts attended. Did you ever meet him?
Yeah, he was a family friend. He went to school with my dad, my uncle Don Erickson, played with Robin with the Phillies. He got up for a brief stint as a pitcher in the Phillies organization, but he made it up to the big leagues. I know Robin used to bug him about teaching him the curveball. My uncle had a nasty curveball.
Really? That's an interesting story. And like you mentioned, you come from a long-time baseball family. Your uncle Don pitched for the Phillies in 58, and you also had a brother and several nephews that played in the minors but never reached the big leagues. Were they all pitchers?
What's that? No. Pitchers, no. My brother was a third baseman. Cardinals signed him, and very, very good athlete. And he got spring training. In fact, he was starting third baseman in front of Kenny Reese. They started at the same time, and they tried to change my brother to a switch hitter for some crazy reason. And that's how it goes in the minor league system. Sometimes they move people around.
Sure.
But then his oldest son was drafted as a third baseman, Corey, and he played several years in the minor league organizations. Got a double A, and then his next son, Casey, was a pitcher, also drafted. He was drafted by the Yankees. He played quite a few years. Really, he played there a couple years, I think. He had excellent seasons, and they just didn't move him where he should have been moved and got released, and everybody wanted him. He said, no, this is crazy. I had a great year, a couple great years, and there's no reason to release me. I'll start my life now. So he went home and got a job, started working, got married.
Yeah. You know, in the Yankees minor league system, it's not a great place to be. They don't bring up a lot of guys.
No, Steinbrenner, and again, it was his organization. Basically, the players are his, and he just used them for trade bait. Yeah, it's great to come up through the season, through the system, and make it to the big leagues. But what he did was use some of those players and trade them to get other players from the big league team, and that's how he ran things. It's his business, and that's fine. That's what he did. But it's luck of the draw when you're in the Yankee organization.
Yeah. With all those baseball players in your family, you must have had some interesting discussions at the dinner table.
Yeah, pretty much. My dad was just, he was a great guy. He always coached us when we were little. Different nowadays, but back then, I mean, we're always out playing baseball in the summer. You get a group of neighborhood kids together, and you go out and find a ballpark, and you play all day long. My dad made sure we played in the backyard together, played catch. He'd take us out, hit us grounders. So when you instill that behavior in you and the correct mechanics of playing the game, it makes a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm. You ended up attending the University of New Orleans. How did you end up there?
Well, what had happened, I was having a good year, my senior year at Lamphere High School, and I broke my glove hand arm, my left arm, playing first base. I got in a collision. And didn't really have anybody. I was sort of recruited by a couple colleges, and there was a local college, two local junior colleges in Springfield, and my brother was helping coach one of the junior colleges, which wasn't a great baseball school. It was a small school, and the other junior college was a bigger school and had some accolades of going on and playing in tournaments and whatnot. They wanted me for that next year, the first year in junior college, but my brother's coaching this smaller school, so I went to that school. We had 11 guys on the team, and we beat the bigger junior college every time we played them.
Wow!
And we had we had a good team. And what had happened? I also was playing summer ball after that first year at junior college. And in Springfield, there was another ex-major leaguer, John Shivey, played with the old Washington Senators. He was also a family friend. He happened to come out and watch some ball games. And he mentioned my brother. He said, what is this kid doing here, staying in Springfield and pitching for the junior college here? And my brother told him I didn't have any offers at that time. He said, well, shoot, I know somebody. He called Ron Maestri down at University of New Orleans. John Shivey and him had coached in a collegiate league together, Central Illinois Collegiate League. And he called him and he said, look, I've got some punk here that should be pitching for your college team. And he said, fine, send him down here. So the guy gave me a scholarship sight unseen, and I went to University of New Orleans.
Well, that's a fun story on how a person ends up going to a college, you know, on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
How did, tell us a little about your collegiate baseball career.
Well, the first year of junior college, I had a good year there back in Springfield. Down in New Orleans, I was injured. I don't know what happened. I had a problem with my pitching hand, and that kind of kept me out a little bit. But I threw well my first year down there. I immediately went to the number two spot in the rotation. And the second year, my junior year down there, I guess I more or less was the number one pitcher. I had a good season for him. We went to a tournament at the end of the year. University of New Orleans is known for having good baseball teams. In fact, the coach, Ron Maestri, is from Illinois, and he recruited that first year I went down there, he recruited 13 guys from Illinois.
Wow.
To come down and play in New Orleans. And everybody got along well. I mean, it's tough to have a college in New Orleans, and they all obviously draw from the New Orleans area, but to have that many kids come in from out of state, you'd think there would be some hard feelings. But the 2 years I was there, the local ball players and the guys from Illinois, we got along great, and we still have alumni get-togethers all the time down there. But had a good year, and I was drafted third round by the Twins after that year. Right. I decided to go ahead and sign.
And that was kind of leads into my next question. The Twins drafted you in the third round in 77. Did you think you were on the Twins' radar, and what did you think of pitching for Minnesota?
I never did see any Twins scouts while I was pitching down in New Orleans. I had heard from quite a few of the other scouts coming by. In Springfield, Illinois, the head scout in the Midwest was Jim Bells, and he was a friend of the family. He had told me that he said, "Hey, I put your name in as our number one pick." Bertie Tebbets from the Yankees, he had stopped in to watch me pitch. He was the national cross checker. Once everybody puts in their picks, scouts put in their picks, then they send out a national cross checker to basically give his opinion so they can come up with a number one, two, three pick and how they're going to pick their players. And Bertie Tebbets told me later at a golf tournament, he said, "I put you in as number one."
Oh.
The Yankees asked me who we should draft in the first round. He said, "If you want," he said, and he put my name in. He said, "If you want this guy to be in the big leagues the next year, you pick him. If you don't want this guy in the big leagues next year, you pick Jim Beattie," I think, was the guy they picked. So how I ended up in the third round, I don't know. Which doesn't matter. I got there pretty quick anyway. But it's just weird being told by all these people. But that's how it works. They get in that room and they start announcing their picks. So I ended up with the Twins in the third round.
I think I read somewhere that Ed Dunn was the scout that signed you. Is that accurate?
I believe so, yeah. It's been a while.
Yeah, I think I also read in that piece that he claimed you were such a good infielder that you were like a fifth infielder on the team.
Pretty much. I mean, a lot of guys that are drafted as pitchers aren't. They also play another position. I mean, if you're you're growing up, if you're a pitcher, you're usually playing another position.
Sure.
As I did, and as a lot of other ball players have done. But I was a good fielder out on the mound.
Do you remember what kind of bonus the Twins gave you to sign?
I think it was like $10,000, something like that. Ten or 20, I can't even remember now.
Okay.
I think the minimum salary was $21,000 at that time. But and also John Shivey, the Washington Senator, helped us in the negotiation with the Twins because they wanted to send me to rookie league, go down to rookie league. And John Shivey was in on the negotiation. He said, "What are you, crazy?" He said, "The kid's had 3 years of college. He's done this, he's done that." He said, "You got to send him higher up the ladder." So they came back and said, "Well, we'll send him to A-ball somewhere." And John said, "No, that's just crazy." And because my Ed Dunn, I guess, was calling and talking to the higher-ups, and my sister, one of my sisters was in the other room. She could hear him talking all the time. He said, "Hey, we got a tough guy here negotiating for these guys." And he said, "I don't know what to do." I said, "Well, go back and ask him again." And Shivey said, "Look, I wouldn't put him lower than double A." And Shivey kept pushing for triple A, but they ended up sending me to double A. And basically had done said, "Look, double A is one of our best teams. AAA is a mixture of some guys being sent down, some guys on the way up." He said it would be a good place for him to go to AA. We got a good manager there, Johnny Goro. So that's what happened. I got sent to Double A.
Yeah. Not many pitchers out of college start in Double A.
Not nowadays,
anyway. You must have signed fairly quickly because you went on to pitch for the Orlando Double-A team in the Southern League, and where you threw 109 innings, and that's after throwing 89-plus innings for your college team. And I think the notes here said that, you know, with that 109 innings, you came up just a couple innings short of winning the ERA title.
Yeah. The last, second to the last game of the season, I was pitching, and I was winning. I did 5-0 or something, and it was the probably the fifth inning, and Johnny Gorrell took me out, put in Tim Schellenbach, who was our pitching coach, and the Twins wanted a left-hander in the bullpen up in big league, and they didn't have anybody to pull from, I guess, in Triple A. Schellenbach, who'd never played in the big league, and really wasn't active, they had him start throwing a little bit in the minor league with us, and then Johnny Gorrell put him in the game to throw the last three innings of this ball game. So those three innings are what I needed to win the ERA title and have enough innings to qualify, which someone had mentioned that to Johnny, and Johnny basically said, "Hey, that kid doesn't care."
Oh. They must have not had that rule in place where, you know, nowadays if you don't get enough at-bats or innings pitched, they just add them on, assuming kind of the worst.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Then, you know, after that season ended, you went on to pitch in the Florida Instructional League. I mean, you pitched in college and in Double A and then the Instructional League, and you seemed to breeze through it. You know, pro ball must have seemed really easy to you.
Oh, baseball. I mean, that's one thing my brother always says when you're watching a ball game on TV and there's a rookie up there that does something stupid, and the announcers always say, "That's a rookie mistake." My brother says, "That's crazy. Been playing baseball since you're 5 or 6 years old. There's no such thing as a rookie mistake." That's just something for the announcers to say.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much know what you're doing when you get there. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the same with me. I had a good arm, healthy arm, and I could throw all day. So that didn't bother me with what we were doing. I mean, obviously it bothered me after the next year, mm-hmm. but there were reasons for it.
In the spring of 78, in just your second season of pro ball, you were a non-roster invitee to spring training with the Twins, and you had a great spring, and you ended up earning a spot in a starting rotation as a 21-year-old. What were you thinking when you found out that you had made the Twins team?
There wasn't a whole lot of time to celebrate and think about it, because it just went day to day. I remember Gene Mock telling some of the officials with the Double-A team, because he had been down to watch some of the instructional ball, and I guess the front office of the Double-A, the Orlando Twins, they kept mentioning to Gene, "Hey, this kid down here can pitch. He can pitch for you." And Gene kept getting reports about how I was falling, and which Dean told me later, but some other people told me later, sports writer, Dean said, "There's no way some punk out of college is making my big league team." and I guess the ball just kept rolling. He'd throw me out there in spring training. I'd do the job. He liked what I did. And I just kept getting people out. So it just kind of escalated as the season down in spring training went, where they kept sending people down or releasing people, and it was getting down to the wire. There wasn't too many people left. And my brother, I talked to him. He was back home. He said, "Hey," he said, "I'm counting the people on this team." He said, "There's not too many people left." He said, "You sure they haven't told you you made the team?" I said, They haven't said anything. I said, I look around and I can count. I said, "There's only a handful of us here that have a shot to stick with the team." So it went down to the last couple of days, and they finally told me, "Well, we're taking you with the team."
Interesting.
That's basically what they asked Gene about it, some sports writers and whatnot. And he said, "I know what I said before about no punk kid from college coming right out of college can make the big league." He said, "I got to take him." He said, he does everything right. He said, I sent my coaches out there to do a drill we just learned about. He took the pitchers out there, the coaches forgot how to do the drill. And the coaches said, "Hey, does anybody here know how to do the drill?" And the only guy that spoke up was Roger. He knew how to do the drill. He said, "Coaches didn't even remember it. Coaches didn't know how to do it." He said, "The other pitchers, the veteran pitchers, didn't know what to do." And this kid said, "Hey, I know how to do the drill." He said, "So, in light of how he's thrown, I'm taking him."
Nice. You had a fantastic rookie season. You led the team in starts with 37. You had 14 complete games. You led the team in innings pitched with 265.2 and strikeouts with 121, not to mention setting a new Twins team record with 10 pickoffs. That was an amazing rookie year. What do you remember about that?
I remember the first half was very good, I guess, record-wise. And people always say, talk about the 14 wins. Well, really, at one point, I was 13-7, and from that point on, I threw better. I ended up 14-13. So it was just a case of us not scoring. And I like the fact that everything was working, but near the end of that year, my arm did have a little twinge in it, which I didn't know about, and I think that was probably for learning a different way to throw a breaking pitch. I don't think it was because of the innings. Everybody thought that you too many innings. I think it was a different way of throwing the slider. They didn't want me to throw a curve and slur that I used to throw, and I think it was just taught to me a little wrong. I think that's what resulted in the problem with my arm.
What pitch?
I remember the pickoffs. I had a good pickoff move, and so much so that a couple of, in fact, we were watching Ken Burns baseball on TV the other night, and the episode where they're Earl Weaver was out there arguing with Bill Howard, umpire, and they're screaming back and forth. And my wife had mentioned something to him about this guy's really screaming at that umpire. And I don't know, I kind of alluded to the fact that I said, "Well," she said, "Do you know any of these guys?" I said, "Yeah, I played at the same time." Mm-hmm. In fact, Earl's the one that's complaining so much about me picking guys off. The umpires kept watching for something, and they saw a balk on me, and they didn't know why they called it. They just said, "Well, you did something." And I said, "What's that? You can't call a balk because you think I did something." Yeah. And that's how they did it for that second, third year. They just kept calling balks on me because I fooled them. So,
yeah. Well, that don't seem right.
No.
Not at all. What pitches did you throw, Roger?
In the big leagues, I just threw the two different fastballs, the four seam and a two seam fastball, and then I threw like a cut fastball slider and like I said, it was just something that was taught to me in instructional ball that they wanted me to throw more of. I had a fork ball, but I didn't throw it. Should have, and threw a changeup if I really had to. And that's not my probably look back and should have thrown more of. I just threw mostly fastballs. That's just the way I was brought up. But you definitely got to mix a few more changeups.
But you weren't really a strikeout pitcher.
What's that?
You weren't really a strikeout pitcher per se.
No. No, I had an excellent sinker, which I didn't throw enough of. Because I just like throwing the four-seamer, the hard fastball. Because, again, that's how I just grew up. Grew up throwing hard and challenging everybody. And they said, you can't do that in the big leagues, but I did. But a lot of people remember when I threw and I mixed in both fastballs, but a lot of people remember the moving fastball, the sinker that I had. And I probably should have stuck with that more and mixed in some changes. But hey, you're in the big leagues at 21, you're just kind of going out there on gut.
Yep.
And throwing. Yep. I remember here, I'm down here in Georgia, and we put together a little golf tournament in Helen, Georgia. Daryl Chaney's down here, and he used to put on these tournaments for Major League Baseball alumni. So he's called some of the same guys, and they come in because it's a cute little resort town and a beautiful golf course. And he'll get some of the old-timers in here and also some NFL players, hockey players.
Ooh, nice.
It's a good time. Well, 2 years ago, they finally got Bobby Cox to come because Bobby lives up in this area, and he had retired from managing.
Mm-hmm.
So Bobby walks in the lobby of the hotel and kind of looked around and recognized me and came over and said, hey, how's that sinker doing? Can you still throw that sinker? And I said, yeah, I'd still throw it. But I didn't throw it off in the big league. He said, yeah, what's that? So that's what some people remember, and I probably should have thrown that one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one thing that you were saying about strikeouts. I didn't go for the strikeouts per se. If I had a changeup, mix more of those in and more breaking pitches, then you'll get more strikeouts. But I'm throwing a lot of fastballs and sinking fastballs. I'll get the ground out. But I'll take an out any way you can get it.
That's right. Right now, strikeouts seem to be in vogue again.
Yeah, weird how that happened.
Yeah. I have to ask you about the brawl on April 22nd of 78 with the Angels' Bobby Gritch. Can you tell us about that?
Well, the situation where we were playing the Angels and Frank Tanana was pitching, and he hit Bombo Rivera for apparently no reason, and in light of how things are in baseball now, where you can't even throw to anybody, let's just say I was protecting my player.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened the next inning.
Yeah, there's. Go ahead.
It was an all-out brawl. There was fights all over the field. I just know that I was protecting my player, and then after the brawl ensued, and my players were trying to protect me.
Yeah, I don't know if you get out on the internet very much, but there's a YouTube video out there of that.
Yeah, someone found it and called me and told me about it. And they said, well, you're just standing there. And I said, I didn't know he was charging the mound. All of a sudden, he was right there. I said, I missed him with a pitch. And I looked down at the mound. Was kind of embarrassed, and then all of a sudden I look up, and he's standing right there. So he threw a punch, and and I kind of blocked it, and I threw one, and I don't think it hit. And then all of a sudden, somebody just, Rich Childs, I mean, he just basically ran into both of us, knocked us both to the ground.
Yeah, that was quite a brawl, that's for sure. Ron Shapiro.
What had happened in that also was Ronnie Jackson got hurt, broke a bone in his wrist, I think, in that brawl. And then later on in the year, when he got the cast off of, and he was with the Angels, when he got the cast off of his left wrist, we're playing back in Minnesota again. Nolan Ryan's pitching.
Ooh.
And I threw a ball up and in, and not meaning to rush anybody back or hit anybody, but Ronnie Jackson used to stand up on top of the plate, and the ball sailed up and hit him on the wrist that he had broke in April. So he dropped the bat and charged him out. And then we end up trading for him the next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that he got hurt in that brawl to begin with.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's what somebody was telling me, because he was out of action not too long after that brawl. So I think that's what happened.
Okay. Ron Shapiro, I believe, was your agent. How did salary negotiations go with Calvin Griffith after your 78 rookie season?
You know Calvin. I mean, yeah. He's pulling teeth to get money, and I wasn't privy to how things worked at that time. I didn't have Shapiro that second year. I just took the advice of another guy on the team, and he was a attorney, I think, for a school system out east, and he had worked on a couple of the guys on our team's contract negotiations.
Oh.
And they just said, hey, he's a good guy. I talked to him, and I said, yeah, fine. I said, basically, I could have walked in and did the same thing. Not saying he didn't do a good job and he was a good guy, but I think Quinn's had a set figure in mind what they're going to give me, and that was it.
Yeah. See, Calvin didn't want to spend his money that way, that's for sure.
No.
You started out the 79 with a complete game win, and after that it seemed to be all downhill for you. After your June 17 start, I think you were sent down for a little bit to Toledo, I believe, and then called up again on August 5th. Although you pitched more effectively when you returned, you still had elbow issues, and you ended up undergoing surgery to relieve pressure on your ulnar nerve. Can you tell us about that?
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. Everybody thought I threw too many innings, and a lot of people were worried about that. And then I threw about the same amount the year before, combined in college and minor leagues and instructional leagues. So I threw quite a lot of innings. I think it was just not learning that slider correctly that caused the problems. And I had that little twinge at the end of the year, and I didn't know what it was. I worked out. I rested it. It felt all right, but again, taking the advice of a lot of people, I tried to change my delivery to relieve some pressure. Basically, I was hurting a little bit, and I should have just chucked everything and just went back to just cranking it, throwing it, and not worrying about if it was hurting or not. But I guess I was just worried about too many things and not wanting to throw the breaking pitch, because I knew that's what probably hurt my elbow. So I struggled a little bit, and Gene Mock just figured I needed to be taught a lesson. And I don't know what the lesson was supposed to be the other day. My arm was hurt. So he sent me down to Toledo. First came out, I threw a complete game, like two hitters. So obviously, I learned a lesson on the way there. I don't know. But when I got called back up, I went back to not throwing, or went back to my original breaking pitch that I threw in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I shelved that dinky little slider they showed me. So I threw better. And they knew it was hurting. My arm was hurting. And that was before anybody got the, other than Tommy John, he's the only one that had that surgery. And our doctor just said, well, it is swollen, the nerve is damaged, we'll just scrape it and see what happens.
Hmm. What, you know, had the times been different, you know, in the future, do you think you would have had Tommy John surgery then?
Probably would have, yeah. They do the Tommy John sort of the drop of a hat now because they've got that ulnar nerve for the purposes of using your arm like pitchers do. Shouldn't be in that little groove, crazy bone, when you bump it. It should be protected. It should be up out of the way. So when they do that to some of the pitchers, I don't know why, but all of a sudden it frees them up to throw a little bit harder once they get their arms back in shape.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting how that happens. In 1980, you actually pitched pretty well. I think you threw about 191 innings, had a 3.25 ERA, which was best of all the Twin starters and eighth best in the American League, but you had an unlucky 7-13 record. What are your thoughts on that season?
Well, to me, that was as good as my first year, if not better. I was in every ball game, seventh, eighth inning. Every game was a good game. What had happened? I started that spring training, and my arm was still a little weak, and it was touch and go if Gene was going to take me. But he said, "You're throwing well enough. I'm taking you." And I started the season as a starter, and a couple of the coaches kept bugging me about it. They said, "It looks like you're in pain out there." And I said, "I'm fine." And then one day I admitted it to one of the coaches. I said, "Yeah, it hurt." And Gene happened to be standing around the corner. So the next day, he said, "Hey, you're in the bullpen." So they threw me in the bullpen. Well, I was in pain because I didn't get adequate information on how to rebuild the muscles in my arm. So I tracked down somebody I used to know and got a few exercises from them, which I should have thought of myself. Started doing the exercises, my arm started getting stronger, and pain went away. So all of a sudden, I'm coming in relief and throwing very well, and he put me back in the bullpen, back in the starting rotation, and the rest is history. They say I threw well the rest of that season. In fact, I was probably under 3 ERA going into the last game of the season, and it was just a weird game. I don't know what was going on. The catcher was nervous. I couldn't see signals very well. It's just something just didn't mesh. And Kansas City scored a lot of runs like second to last game of the season or something. And that bumped my ERA up to 3.25, and I was still in the league leaders.
Well,
so to me, that was my best year on just how I how I adjusted to things, and again, I was in every ball game. I mean, these were games that I was either winning or getting beat 1-0, 2-1. So that was a pretty good year for me.
Heck, a 3.25 ERA today, boy, you'd really be a standout.
Yeah.
Things have changed a lot. In the The next season, the strike-shortened 81 season, you only had 14 starts after, I believe, you stopped a Kirk Gibson line drive with your pitching hand in mid-August. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. I got behind in the count on Kirk Gibson. I think 3-1 threw a fastball down the middle. He hit a line drive back at me, and I caught the ball. I mean, it was coming right back at me, and I had both hands together. I caught the ball, threw it around the horn, and next batter gets in there. Butch Weinberg called for a fastball, and I went to throw the ball, and Payne shot through my hand up my arm, and Butch took his mask off and kind of gave me a signal like, I asked for a fastball, not a four changeup, and I yelled in. I said, "That was a fastball." That was a fast. He called timeout, ran out, and he said, "What do you mean that was a fastball?" And I said, and I looked down, and I had seam marks on my thumb. He said, "What happened there?" I said, "Well, I didn't really catch that ball." I said, "The line drive hit my thumb, and my glove happened to be there. It kind of bounced off into the glove." And he said, "Well, that's weird." So the umpire said, "Well, why don't you throw a few pitches? You think you can throw?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Let me try it." And I threw a few pitches, and the stinging, the numbness was going away. It still hurt. And I said, "Well, it still hurts some, but I had a little more velocity on the pitch." And umpire standing out there said, "Throw a curveball." And I threw a curveball. And the umpire said, "Well, that's the best curveball you've thrown." That's a lot. And so it was fine. I didn't know I had broke it. I just thought I got hit, and it was swelling a little bit. So, I mean, I was pulling on it and trying to stretch it in the dugout. I had guys pulling on it, and I threw like six more innings, shut them out until, I don't know, maybe seventh, eighth inning, and maybe Payne was getting to it or something, but I walked the guy, and I think Rick Leach maybe hit a home run, and then they take me out. Me out before that. I was in Detroit, so after the game, the doctor from Detroit checked me out and said, "You better come in for some x-rays." And I went in the next day for x-rays, and she said, "Yeah, it's broken."
Well, you guys were tough back then. I mean, you pitch five or six innings with a broken thumb, and you got Jim Cott, I think, broke his wrist sliding into base and ended up finishing the game pitching, and they don't do that nowadays.
No, definitely. I mean, as our Yanks, well, they're making too much money. They're worried about them. But, I pitched... when I was growing up, I pitched a doubleheader before. I pitched with a broken arm. The arm that I broke in high school, broke it in half. I had a cast on for 2 months. I had one up to my armpit for a month, and then they took that off, put one on from my hand to my elbow. And all during this time, my brother said, "Well, you got to keep your throwing arm loose." But we always played catch. And I just catch the ball in the back of my glove. I couldn't open my fingers, couldn't open the glove. And we got to the point where it was almost time to take it off. And I was on a summer league team, and my brother was coaching it. And he said, "Well, shoot, you can pitch. Just catch the ball in the back of your glove."
Jeez.
And let me do it. I couldn't hit right-handed. I had to hit left-handed. And all I did is stand up the plate with holding the bat in my right hand. And hope for a walk, and if I got two strikes, I could take a swing with one hand.
Wow.
And then after I got cast taken off, we wrapped it up in bubble wrap so I wouldn't get hit on an atrophied arm.
Yeah. That's crazy times, boy. It seemed like during most of your Twins career, you know, the team scored very few runs for you, and when you pitched, it just Do you remember it that way?
Yeah, pretty much. that happened quite a bit. It was just one of those weird situations, I guess. If you're throwing well, you know, it's a good game. The other team's not scoring, you're not scoring, so it's just kind of status quo that way. Maybe that's it. But hey, that was just weird. That's what I was saying. My first year, second half of the season, we didn't score that many runs, or else I would have won 20 games maybe. I don't know. And the same on that 1980 you were talking about. I remember some new guys on the team, pitchers, are just shaking their heads going, you know, you're dealing every time out there. We just can't score runs for you. And it became obvious to the sports writers because it was in the paper all the time. But, that's what happens sometimes.
Yeah, it just seems like you get in a rut like that and it just doesn't change. In early 1982, Calvin Griffith traded you and Butch Weiniger to the Yankees for three players that wouldn't help the Twins much and a bundle of cash. It seemed like Griffith was having a fire sale and trading the best players to save money. What do you remember of the trade?
Yeah, I think it was, a situation where, and I had mentioned to him before, I think that one of the veterans on the team said, hey, you want to be traded, you ought to go and tell him. Just get rid of me if you don't like me here anymore or something. And I think I did that the year before, told Howard Fox. I said, I see all the rumors in the paper, and there was some rumors. I said, why don't you just go ahead and do it? That was the year before. I don't know if that stuck in their mind. But I had heard from the Yankees later that star from Jeff Torborg had told me he was bullpen coach at the Yankees. And he said the Yankees were trying to make this trade. They needed a catcher. They needed Weiniger. Sperone was hurt, and they needed to get a catcher, and Calvin was willing to trade people. So, and the Yankees liked me, so they said, well, because Redfern was offered, or I was offered, and Yankees wanted me. So that's what I remembered about that deal.
Okay. You ended up only pitching in 21 games combined for the Yankees in 82 and 83, and then the Yankees traded you to the Royals after the 83 season. Unfortunately, you would not return to pitching in the major leagues again. At the age of just 27, you could not have thought that your big league career was over.
No. If I wasn't traded to the Yankees, I might have stayed in Minnesota for 20 years. But you get with the Yankees, and they have no idea what they're doing. What happened, they threw me in the bullpen the first day. Butch and I joined in Oakland, and someone got in trouble. Didry, I think, got in trouble in, I don't know, sixth inning. And they called down and told me to get up. Well, I could always get loose in a hurry. I got up in the bullpen. I threw about five or six pitches. I said, I'm right. And they waved the hat down there. I think Torborg was there in the bullpen at that time. Well, no, down in the dugout at that time. He'd go back and forth, but he looked down and he said, there's no way. And he called down, and I said, yeah, he's ready. And he runs down, and he said, what do you mean you're ready? I said, I'm ready. Let's go. He said, that's crazy. He said, I saw you throw about six, seven pitches. And I he said, throw a few more, and I threw a couple. He goes, geez, you're ready. So they bring me in the game. I get out of the jam, and Torborg had told the front office, he said, hey, we ought to make this guy a reliever.
Hmm.
So all of a sudden, you know, I pitch a game, and then Clyde King came down from the front office and wanted to relay a message where we don't like your windup. You got to change your windup so you can do this, do that. And so basically I had to work in the bullpen with Dan Williams, was the pitching coach, work on my delivery because they didn't like it. And Stan had said, look, you're throwing as hard as these guys now. And if you do what I want you to do in some kind of weird old windup, you'll be thrown harder than Goose. And I said, well, if I do that, then what's Goose going to do? And actually, he said, you take Goose's job. I said, well, what's he going to do? But I said, fine. I changed my windup, did what they said, and they were going to make me the setup man for Goose. I said, well, whatever you need me to do. So I had worked out in the bullpen for about an hour, and they said, well, you're not going to get in the game today. Just put your running shoes on, take your spikes off, sit in the dugout. I said, fine. We go into extra innings. Yogi Berra comes down and says, hey, they want me to ask you if you can pitch. I told him no, because you threw about an hour down there in the bullpen before the game. I said, well, Yogi, I want to pitch. Tell him, yeah. He said, okay. I go down to the bullpen, I get loose. They bring me in the ball game. I throw two innings, I think, and then we're pretty much out of pitchers. Then they bring Goose in to throw an inning, and then we hit and we scored a run. Goose gets a win, and I figured, there you go. I'm the setup man now. I did exactly what they wanted me to do. This is pretty cool. I'll be the setup man for Goose. And they come in and say, look, you got to start this Friday. Start. So I won four games in a row, and then they fired a pitching coach, brought in Sammy Ellis, and he said, look, I don't want to mention anything, but you've been throwing good, but, you know, and he wanted me to change something I was doing with my glove hand, with my lead arm, which I wasn't exactly using it properly, probably because I played catch with a cast on when I was in high school. So I was kind of dropping that arm, but I was still using the front shoulder correctly and still throwing strikes. But he had me try something weird the next game out, and all of a sudden my shoulder started hurting. So I mentioned that to the trainer. The trainer mentioned it to Clyde King, who had taken over as the manager, and Clyde put me on disabled list. He said, hey, we're not going anywhere. We're, I don't know, nine games out or something. He said, I'm going to put you on disabled list. Never came off it. They kept trying all kinds of weird treatment, and I finally just called somebody I knew. He said, you don't need that. Do this, do that. And I said, look, I want to try my own treatment, and they got mad about it, but my arm felt better. But it kept, the shoulder problem kept coming back, so that kind of added to my demise, I guess. But the Yankees is just a weird organization.
They just
like, buy people and use you up, throw you away.
Yeah. You know, it just seems like through different times in your career, different pitching coaches or managers wanted to change your pitching style.
Yeah. And I should have stuck true to my guns. Because I was pretty stubborn, I tried to accept things, and especially just at room, if they left me alone, I'd been fine. Now, if I hadn't hurt my arm to that point, I wasn't going to hurt it in the big league. But it's just kind of weird. I shouldn't have listened to some people, but here in the big leagues, in the big leagues for a reason.
Yep. Yep, that's for sure. You tried to come back in 1984, 1987, and again in 1989, and then at the age of 32, I think you call it quits. Tell us a little about that time in your life.
Well, I was traded to Kansas City. They never did pitch me. My shoulder was hurting, but I had gotten strong, and I was throwing fine, and in spring training with Kansas City, they didn't throw me. I threw one inning of a B game.
Wow.
The whole spring training, and that was it. I couldn't figure it out. And Dick Houser, when he released me, and I had asked him before why I wasn't getting the throw in. And he said, well, look, you know, it's just the dynamics of our situation here. We got some young pitchers up here. We want to give them a shot. And I said, you know, Dick, I'm at that time 26. And I said, what do you mean young player? He said, look, I didn't promise you anything. Like, I don't know what Billy promised you. And I said, what do you mean, Billy? He said, Billy Martin. And then I found out from Billy later, Billy's the one that pushed to get me traded because Steinbrenner was kind of screwing me around. And because after they sent me down with the Yankees over something silly, and I won't go into that long story, they just wanted to bury me. And then they brought me back up near the end of the year, and I took over for Rigetti in the second inning of a game, bases loaded, no out. I come in the ball game, get out of the jam, and shut Baltimore out the rest of the game. So it embarrassed Steinbrenner and the Yankees because I've been sitting down there in Triple-A, and not with a good attitude. I won some ball games, but I didn't pitch well. So it embarrassed them, so they shelled me for the rest of the year. And Billy said, hey, they're putting the screws to you. They don't want me to pitch you. He said, I'm trying to get you out of here. He said, I told Houser to, if you need some pitching, trade for it. So Houser, that's why he was saying that in spring training. He said, look, just the way our front office wants to do this and that. He said, I'm sorry, I didn't promise you anything. I know Billy did. And but Billy didn't promise you anything. And at that time, I didn't know what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But they released me, and then Detroit picked me up a month later, and I had a good season with them, but my shoulder was hurt. So I just decided to, I said, that's enough. I can't figure this out. So I quit till I went to Mexico, maybe Italy. I played a little bit in Mexico 1 year, and then Italy the next year. I went over there, and in Italy, you only play 3 games a week, and the pitcher, American pitcher, can only pitch once. First game over there, I struck 14 guys out, and then they shelved me because I was pitching in Mexico earlier that year, and you can't play in a professional league and then come over and play in the Italian league that particular year. You could do it as you start the season with them.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in a professional league, you couldn't go from professional league to Italy. So I threw batting practice for them for the rest of the summer and just spent time in Italy.
Well,
at that time, I just said, ah, this is enough. This is crazy. And then an agent out of the blue called me and said he was getting back into the agent game, talked to some people that knew me. He wanted to help me out, and he got me a tryout with Louisville. With the Cardinals. And Ted Simmons was the director of player development. So I talked to Ted. I was in Springfield at the time. I just drove down to St. Louis and threw for Ted, and he said, you can still throw. He said, but come back in 2 days and let me see if you can still throw, because I know you had shoulder problems. And I did. And he said, you can throw, man. I'm sending you to minor league camp. So to get in shape better, I guess, I went to New Orleans, where I used to go to school, to work out down there in some warm weather. Stayed with a buddy of mine that played on the team down in New Orleans a couple years before me. While he was at work one day, I had a Chevy van, and I had a dented bumper, and I drove by a car dealership, bought a new bumper, and was changing the bumper in his driveway, trying to do everything with my left hand so I wouldn't hurt my hand. And there was one bolt take off of there, and I reached under to unscrew it, and the bumper slipped, and it cut the tip of my little finger and broke it, almost cut it off. So we go to the emergency, and the guy sews it up, and you better not do anything with this hand for a while. So I had to go to spring training with the minor league Cardinals, not being able to throw for a couple weeks. He said, well, what do you want to do? I said, my little finger, I can throw. He said, well, take a couple weeks, and we'll see what happens. And at that time, my arm felt tremendous. I made the team, but with having that little finger and compensating for the broken finger, my shoulder started hurting again. So I ended up just throwing a little bit here and there, going on disabled list, and then they asked me at the end of the year to become a pitching coach for their A-ball team in my hometown, so I just took that job.
Did you ever find out what your shoulder issues were?
It's one of the cuff muscles, but what had happened, I found out years later going to a chiropractor, a friend of mine at Springfield, Illinois. I had back problems, probably from pitching, and some muscles that tightened up, and they tightened up through my neck and shoulder. Mm-hmm. And that was causing most of the problems. And he basically did treatment, rubbing the knots out that were in my neck and shoulder area. And I left my arm, and it didn't hurt. That was probably the problem. I should have went to a chiropractor, should have got all that checked out, or should have got massages or something. Okay, I don't know. But that was the root of the problem. Now, I don't know if I had damaged my cuff during that time or not, but it was already too late to try it. Comebacks are tough to do when you don't have the place to go work out every day.
Sure. You mentioned playing in Italy. I haven't found anything anywhere that talks about you playing in Italy. When did you play there? Do you remember what year?
'87 maybe.
Okay. Huh. That's interesting. In 1990, I think you joined the Senior Professional Baseball Association for a while before that folded. What was that league like to play in?
It was fun. I think the first year they had it, I wasn't eligible age-wise, and that was a smarter way to do the league. It was down in Florida, I believe. The next year, for some crazy reason, they decided to add teams in California. That means you're going to have do some flying back and forth, and
yep.
A startup league like that, you don't have that money. They had a good idea to see some of the older ball players, not too old, but and still put on a good game. But I've been coaching in Springfield for the Springfield Cardinals, and throwing batting practice all the time. And I said, shoot, I could fit. So I went out. San Bernardino, I got drafted by their team. And Vita Blue, Mike Norris, and me were the rotation. It was fun. I mean, it was fun to see all these guys, and a bunch of them could still play. Some of them got signed out of the league. But we, maybe Thanksgiving break, and then never came back. They folded after that.
That's kind of a shame. In 91 and 92, I think you coached in the minor leagues, but then it appears you left baseball in your rearview mirror. How come?
I could have kept going. It was just you get soured on it. I mean, I did a great job for the Springfield Cardinals. The kids really liked me. I got a couple kids moved up the ladder, just teaching them the right mechanics of pitching and hitting, because I snuck in a little hitting lesson now and then, because we just had traveling hitting instructors, so I helped out when I could. And then Ed Simmons fires everybody. From what he said throughout the whole organization, I don't know if it was just me. I just said, well, this is stupid. I put everything into this job. Guys that were that I had 1 year, and they moved up the ladder somewhere else or sideways to one of the other A-ball teams. When they had difficulty, they'd call me, and I said, look, I can't come and watch the throw. I can't do this and that. Or they'd ask Ted if they can take the day off, go see me. And Ted get mad about it. He said, hey, you got a pitching coach on your team. And they said, no, we want to go see Roger. And figure out what we're doing wrong. And they just ticked him off, I guess. And so I just decided it wasn't worth it to go bouncing around and traveling. So I just stayed in Springfield and did batting cages, and I had a sporting goods store.
Okay, is that what you did after your baseball career?
Yeah, I was debating on whether to go get back into minor leagues, but ran into somebody who wanted to partner up with me, and we should have went right to batting cages, but we ended up doing sporting goods. It's retail, and that was kind of stupid on my part. And then we ended up closing that, so I went back to doing batting cages, did that for, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years. And then ended up moving down here to Georgia.
Do you live in Georgia now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I still got a place in Illinois. A lot of family are up there. But I don't get back that much. I'm down here in Georgia with my wife. She has some health problems and might not like the snow in Illinois.
Yeah, I can understand that. But
oh, it's UGA, is a Georgia Bulldog. So she came down to see some doctors and felt that she needed to be down here with the mountains and whatnot. And so I ended up coming down here and fell into a job at a winery. Did that for 15 years. Assisted the winemaker. We crushed the grapes and made the wine. Bottled it, labeled it, delivered it. It's the biggest winery in Georgia. But now what I'm trying to do is, I had a little situation with my heart, went into AFib, and which it goes out of rhythm. So I've got it shocked back into rhythm a couple times, and so I'm trying to take it easy. And searching for a building to do batting cages down here.
Okay.
And it's just tough to find a building.
Yeah, I'm sure. But so your health is okay now?
As far as I know, I'm just kind of tired to take a lot of medication.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've never been to the doctor since I left pro ball. Never walked into a doctor's office.
Wow.
And I got bit by a black widow spider about 4 years ago. And put me in the hospital. And that was the first time it threw my heart out of rhythm. And then didn't think anything about it. And then I started huffing and puffing about a year ago, thinking I was in very bad shape. And went to the doctor, and he said, well, you're in AFib, atrial fibrillation, where your heart goes out of rhythm. The only way to get it back is cardiologist will, they give you some drugs, get you a little dopey, then they stop your heart, and then they shock you back in the rhythm.
Doesn't
easy to them. They do it. Oh, we do it every day.
Easy for them to say.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. Yeah,
I had that. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I had had that done. Went back to work, tried to take it easy, but I just I work hard, so I probably just fell back in to exert myself too much, and it went out of rhythm again.
Yeah, that's kind of tough.
I want to keep going in and getting shocked back in the rhythm.
Wow.
Given that too many chances.
Yeah. I've had bypass surgery, so I kind of know what that's like to some degree. But you played at Met Stadium and the Metrodome. What are your thoughts about those two ballparks?
I love the old Met Stadium. That was a heck of a field. Metrodome was just, you know, the first of one of those domes. The turf wasn't that great. There were some little problems with it, but I liked it. It was pretty neat. But I'd take playing outside anytime.
Yeah, and most players say that. You played for a number of pitching coaches. In your opinion, how important is a pitching coach to a pitcher?
Well, it's really important just to have somebody there to confide in, have somebody who understands the game, where understands pitching, where they can be watching you. And the main thing, if they see you when you're doing well, and then if you get kind of out of kilter, they can pick it up, they can spot it, and they're also there for to motivate you, slap you on the butt. And that's the important thing about being a pitching coach. Like I was saying before, if you got to the big league, you must be doing something right. So the best part of being a pitching coach is seeing what you're doing right, and can help you if you get out of rhythm, I guess.
Who was your favorite pitching coach and why?
I like Camilo Pascual. He was my first pitching coach. He cared quite a bit about everyone, and he was the perfect one. He could spot what you were doing wrong because he saw you when you were throwing well. He studies the game. That's great about the old days, I'll call them. It's your job, but you love the game, and you concentrate on how you can win each game, so you're watching everybody's mechanics. You're watching what happens on the field. And that's what Camilo could understand. If I was doing something a little weird, hey, you used to be doing that, you were doing this before. And he was a great guy. I remember when one time they were trying to get me to go back to throwing a big curveball after teaching me the little cut fastball slider.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been working on kind of an overhand, some kind of weird curveball, I can't remember, but they wanted me to work on that. And I remember working on it down in the bullpen with Camilo, and Camilo, he's standing down there going, ooh-wee, Royer, good curveball. I said, Camilo, good as yours? He goes, oh, no. Which, no, nobody had a good curveball that day.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of ironic because, you know, about a year ago, I had written a piece for my website that I was being really critical of Camilo and the Twins for overusing you in your rookie season. And here you, I asked for your favorite pitching coach, and it turns out to be Camilo Pascual. Goes to show what I know.
Yeah. Camilo, I'm sure, is one of the ones that probably didn't like me throwing that many innings because he cared about me. So my memory's kind of bad, but I'm pretty sure he had mentioned that a few times to me, that I was probably throwing too many innings and he worried about me.
Hmm.
So there's no doubt that he didn't want me to throw that many innings because it might hurt my arm. But again, I think it's just throwing the bad sliders what hurt it.
Yeah. You had kind of a ringside seat watching Rod Carew play his final season in Minnesota. What was Rod like in the clubhouse?
He's a good guy. He's quiet. He just went about his business. One thing I remember is he had a little wrist exercise gadget. It was just a dumbbell bar and weights on one end. But after every game, he would do a few exercises for his forearm, and win or lose or whatever happened. So, and he was a professional in and out. I liked him. He was a good guy.
What do you think about pitch counts?
Not that much. I think they're trying to figure out how they protect pitchers' arms. But I think if you're in a game, you're winning the ball game. You're putting in a good effort. Let them go as far as they can. I think if you want to pitch count the little kids that are thrown in the little league and all those leagues, it's good to keep an eye on not overusing young kids. But again, you're in the big leagues. You should be able to go out there and throw a complete game.
Do you think that
they use it a little too much? You've got so many relievers in the bullpen, and then sometimes they'll utilize that excuse of pitch count and so on and so forth, and let's get this guy in and do that. We don't have to use this guy so much. It's just an easy excuse. Hey, if the guy's pitching a good game, it's his game, leave him in there.
Yeah. Do you think that they coddle the pitchers too much nowadays?
Yeah, I'm sure they do. I mean, these guys, I don't know if they're coddling them in the kids that are coming out of college, but there's so many opportunities now to lift weights, exercising, all the equipment that you can use. These guys are ready to go. You try to hold somebody back and say, well, we think you might get hurt. That's when you do get hurt.
Yeah. Well, why do you think there's so many Tommy John surgeries? Any opinion on that?
I would think probably some bad mechanics of pitching. That's the only thing I can think of offhand. I don't think it's the overuse, but if it's overuse and with bad mechanics, a lot of guys you watch TV. A lot of guys they have the talent to get to the big leagues, but they still have some bad mechanics. They don't have their arm in correct positions, and when you try to throw breaking pitches like that, that's when the problems come up. But I think it's just it's an easy excuse now. Hey, let's go right to the Tommy John surgery. You never know what a little rest would have done for the guy. Or in my case, they just scraped the ulnar nerve, and it came back fine. And again, it might be there's some weird exercises that somebody thought were good, and they're probably not that good. I know there's some Dr. Jove exercises that everybody just loves, and that some of those were for rehab, and guys do them religiously, and it kind of overuses that one of those cuff muscles.
Okay.
There are some exercises they shouldn't be doing.
One of the questions I was going to ask you, but I think you've kind of answered it already, and that was, do you think the Twins overused you and shortened your career?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. In hindsight, if I was sitting back and I was a coach and watching a young kid out there throwing that many innings, I'd kind of be worried about him. But in my case, I could throw all day. The fact that they messed with my windup and taught me a goofy little slider, add that to the quote overuse, that's what hurt my arm. Just not letting me be myself and throw the way I used to throw when I got there, my windup, and then leaving me alone and let me throw the pitches that I had. But I think the offbeat way of teaching the slider is what hurt me.
Okay. What's your best memory of your time with the Twins?
Probably spring training. I mean, the fact that you're going in there and not professional baseball, not knowing what to expect, and thrown into a big league camp and you're playing with and against future Hall of Famers and big leaguers that you see on TV. And I mean, it was just a blast for me, and everything just went great for me, and I was throwing well, having fun. Each day it was a new adventure. Team Mock had confidence in me to keep sending me out there he threw me, started me a game over in Cocoa Beach. Bud and Volk, we played Daytona quite a bit, Cocoa Beach quite a bit. But in Daytona, went over and started a ball game over there, and we get into the second inning, and got a couple guys on, and out here and out there. All of a sudden, we got our number eight hitter going up to hit. Two guys on, and Gene Mock yells at me. He says, "Hey, Brooke, get a bat." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Get a bat." I said, "I don't know what you're talking about." He said, "We're playing a National League team at their park. You got a hit." I said, "All right, cool." I go over to the bat rack and pull out a bat. Somebody on the bench yells, "Not that one, Rook." I pull out another one. "Not that one, Rook." I said, "What bat am I supposed to use?" "Try that rack over there." So I had to go to the batting practice bat. And most of them had tape on them. I pulled one out. It was 35-inch Jackie Robinson, big, thick handle. And I go up to the plate. Guy before me walks. Bases loaded, two outs. I look down at Johnny Gorles, our third base coach. He was my manager in Double-A. He starts giving me signs, giving me signals. And I look at him and go, like, what? Jose Morales is catching because they're showcasing him because we traded for him. And he said, "Hey, Chico, you don't know the signals?" And I said, "Why would I?" I said, "I'm an American League pitcher. This was my first at bat. I didn't know I was supposed to hit. And it's bases loaded, two outs. What do you think I'm going to do?" He said, "Hey, good point." So I get in the batter's box, and the pitcher was Wayne Twitchell, I think. And a big guy, he just threw a fastball down the middle, about 95 miles an hour, and the umpire said, hey kid, take a swing." I said, "Well, I will. I'll get around to it." Count goes to 2-1, and next pitch is middle of the plate, still outside. I hit a line shot in the right field. I'm running down the line thinking I'm a hero, knocking in a few runs. And Ellis Valentine picked the ball up on one hop, threw me out at first base.
Oh, jeez.
There was no place to hide. So Camilo told me later, he said, I asked Gene because I threw like one warm up, to throw it down. And everybody knew I was mad. And Camilo went over to Gene and said, you want me to go talk to him? And Gene said, do you want to go talk to him? Camilo said, no. And Camilo said, do you want to talk to him? And Gene said, no. I'm not going out there.
You know,
I redeemed myself the next week. I was going over to Cocoa Beach. I got a hit off of Nolan Ryan at the first of the week, and I got a hit off of J.R. Richard at the end of the week.
Wow, nice. Nice. Yeah, it's always embarrassing to get thrown out at first on a single, you know.
Yeah. But later on, they asked Ellis Valentine, a sports magazine article about, they asked all the best arms in baseball, what's your best throw ever? And Ellis Valentine said, I threw some Minnesota Twins pitcher out at first base in spring training.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do you still follow the Twins today, Roger?
Yeah, on and off. Any chance I get. I just I've been working so hard for a while that I never got a chance to check into it. But now, if I'm getting batting cages going, then maybe I'll get a chance to watch a little more.
Mm-hmm.
I came up one time and played in a golf tournament, and I don't know if they still have them anymore, but I'd like to do that again.
Yeah, I think they still have a tournament. I don't know if it's just for, you know, the current players.
The Alumni Association used to do them.
Oh, okay.
Sure, they have their local one.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got to run right now. I got to drive over this little town. I'm doing pitching lessons for some guy. I don't know if you're ready to wrap it up or not, or you want to call back, or.